I got questions.
From the things they didn't tell us, to the stuff we still don't know, all the lies they concocted, I'm discovering answers and I'm letting you know.
I got questions. I won't be held down.
I got questions.
And yes, the answers will be found.
Oh yeah, I'm asking because I want to expand my mind. You can call me nosy, but I bet these answers I'ma find. My inquiry leads to what discovery? So come on and get some answers with me.
I got questions.
Hey, this is Charlene Akua Rose Feather saying what's up to my melanated family and our allies. And welcome to I've Got Questions, the podcast where we have real conversations about house business, old wives' tales, flat out lies, and misconceptions. I'm a coach, a speaker, and a motivational teacher, and I'm sharing these conversations to empower you so you can move intentionally in your purpose. Sometimes I'll invite company over, and other times you get to hear from me. But either way, we're going to get these questions answered, y'all. And the question for today is, so there's more to sex than the big O? Hey, what's up, y'all? This is Charlene Akua Rose, and first, let me tell you that this episode's question is the first of a series of many where I'm going to be asking all kinds of questions about sex and sexuality and all the stuff in between. So fasten your seatbelts because that series and this episode, oh, it's going to be good. And guess what? For this episode, I got company. I'm joined today by Goody Howard. Goody is a sexuality educator who hosts sex positive workshops around the country that's focused on intimacy and empowerment. She layers her focus on pleasure and education with her energetic and engaging presentation style. Goody's oral sex series, Lick and Lip Service, are her most popular classes, but she's been teaching comprehensive sexuality education and healthy relationships for campuses, companies, and communities for over 14 years. Sexual pleasure is sexual health. Her mantra is be good or be good at it. And she is determined to normalize sex positive conversations as a way to ease stigma and improve sexual responsibility. Goody has dedicated her life to empowering through sexual exploration, education, and awareness. And we are so honored to have her here with us today.
Welcome, welcome, welcome to I've Got Questions, Goody. How are you?
Yes, I'm great. How are you?
I'm super, super excited. I'm excited, first of all, just because I'm excited, but I'm also excited because of what we're about to talk about today. But before we jump into this big old topic, I want people to know in advance how they can reach you, hire you, connect with you, contact you, and all of that. So please share your information and even, you know, any product offerings that you have and services that you provide.
Okay, well, my name is Goody Howard, and so people are always asking me questions, so my handles are Ask Goody on everything. So it's AskGoody on Instagram, Twitter, Facebook. I'm actually Goody Howard on YouTube and LinkedIn. But everywhere else, I'm Ask Goody. My website is askgoody.com. My email address is askgoody@gmail.com. Like, you can't mess this up. I try to make it as simple as possible for people. And then as far as product offerings and things like that, on the website, I do have an adult toy store. I do live events. I do, like, toy parties. I teach an oral sex workshop. One is for a fellatio, it's called Lick, and the other one is for cunnilingus, it's called Lip Service. And then I also do like co-ed toy parties, and if you want to have a dinner party and just talk about sex with your friends, I'm down for that. I do live sex education and pleasure events on campuses, in communities, and at companies. So you can book me for any of those things.
That's dope. I love it. So first question I have is, when people ask you, do they like try to come like get you in the back of the room, be like, shh, don't say nothing, I'm going to ask, like try to secretly sneak and ask you some questions?
It really depends on the environment. So my friends are guilty of when we go places, they're like, oh, Goody, tell them what you do. And then, you know, yeah. And I'm like, what if I don't do any tricks? Like, what do you, you know? So there's that. And then there's times when people do pull me to the side and go, hey, you know, have a question, or people will slide in my DMs, you know, hey, what's going on? I have a question. Now, the DM questions, I'm usually a little bit leery of initially if it's from men, because it's sometimes it's just like a runaround for them to just get to show me their penis. Like, it happens all the time. They're like, I want a cock ring. What size do I need? Dick pic. Like, sir, this is not... Yeah, like, can you ask so I can say no? Because I don't need to see your penis to tell you what size cock ring that you need. You see what I'm saying? So it's things like that. But most of the questions I get are, am I normal type questions? Or is this freaky type stuff? And really, I can't think of anything that someone's ever asked me, is this normal or is this freaky? And I was shocked. It's the same stuff.
Yeah. But see, and that's one of the reasons why I wanted to talk with you, because there's such a stigma about sex, period. But then when we start talking about body parts, and then we start talking about orgasm, it's like, oh my gosh, you know. So I want to get into, you were telling me before something about orgasms that I'm certain a lot of people don't know. But before we get into that, I want to know from you, why do you think it is such a taboo topic, or why do you think it is something that people are uncomfortable talking about?
I'm going to say it, white supremacy and colonization. I think that, so other cultures, indigenous cultures, black and brown cultures are very embracing and welcoming of sexuality and orientations and pleasure and things like that. But when colonial rule came, it was very puritanical, it was very restricting and limiting, and they said, okay, sex is only in marriage, sex is only for straight people, you're either gay or straight is this, gay is bad. Like, there was all these limits put on it, and then we all internalized that for our own safety. So now we're operating in this colonial binary that has kind of stigmatized pleasure and stigmatized sex in a way that then, now that we're starting to come out from under that and realize that it is problematic, that people are now starting to explore and be themselves. So it was always happening, but it was done in secrecy for the for safety reasons.
And I wonder if that secrecy and that, does it lend to or hinder one's ability to enjoy sex, period?
I'm going to say hinder, just because it's clandestine, right? You have to do it under the cover of night. You have to hide who you really are, or hide who you really desire, or whatever the case may be. Hide what your kinks are, what your orientations are, what your gender is, whatever the aspect of your sexuality is hidden. And if you have to hide it, you're not really free to enjoy it, because your head is on swivel while you're participating to make sure you don't get caught, air quotes. So there's a freedom. The freedom of expression lends to the fulfillment of total pleasure.
So if from that lens, it almost feels kind of rebellious in a way, if you know what I'm saying?
Yeah. It's an act of activism. And some of my hashtags, you'll see hashtag pleasure activism. Because for a lot of us, just existing and loving and enjoying pleasure is an act of resistance. It's an act of rebellion. And we're okay with it.
And do you think that brings us to a place of comfortability with it, or is it just like anything else that we're processing, any other like traumatic things that we're processing, it, you know, kind of slowly but surely?
Yeah, I think I definitely feel like it's a process. And then you also have aspects of socialization that, again, are internalized that makes everyone else think, okay, that's what I said. Is this normal? Is this whatever? But then you have, then you also have the fact that because people are having sex, they automatically feel like they're experts on it because it's something they do regularly for those that are having sex. So then you get people that are like, well, what qualifies you to do this work? Or what qualifies you to teach this thing or have this conversation or do this keynote or give this speech? And so then they're not as readily embracing the information they were providing because they feel like they're the experts on their own sexuality. And you can be to an extent, but it depends on what that manifestation is. Like, my friend did a dissertation on black sexuality because all of the paradigms and research that was done that kind of introduced sexuality to the world as far as now was not based on white black bodies. It was not based on black and brown bodies. It was white folks. So does the sexuality that we're aware of now even include us? Is ours different? Right? So it's like that, the research and the question asking is what qualifies me to give these speeches and do this work. And so, but again, you have that well, what qualifies you? And I'm an expert on this. And I'm, you know, so you have to make space for people. And it is a process.
Yeah. And in our first conversation, you were talking about those who have an expertise, or they call them, they have a certain title that they use to describe what they do. I want to talk about that too, kind of in that conversation of what makes you qualified, period. When we're getting information from anywhere, how do we know that this person is somebody I ought to be talking to?
Well, there is a lot of self-directed study, and we have the information age now. So, and I heard the other day someone said we have the information age and we have the engagement age. So information age is about consuming the information and getting that knowledge. But then the engagement age is how to engage people around what you've learned. So when you're talking about educators in my industry, you have people that are pleasure professionals, like, you know, people that sell sex toys and things like that. And then you have sex educators and sexuality educators, which is a little bit different. Pleasure professionals educate about sex and pleasure, but not to the extent that sexuality educators do, because it includes the social impacts and everything around that as well, and all those underpinnings. So it's very much aligned with social justice and human rights. And then you have sexologists, who are people that, it's just like biology and all the other ologies, it's the scientific study of. So sexologists are asking the questions and doing the research to get those questions answered. So sexologists actually create the curriculums and paradigms and frameworks that sex educators use. And then you have people that say sexpert, and then a sexpert is someone that in my mind is an expert on sex. And sex is such an all-encompassing thing that you can't be an expert at it. It's like being a life coach. You can't coach life. You can coach aspects of life. Like you can be a time management coach or a career coach, right? So for sexuality, you can't necessarily be a sexpert, but you can be an expert about sexuality and aging, or an expert about female ejaculation, or, you know, you can be experts in different aspects. But we use the word sexpert because lay people that are not in our industry, readily identify that as someone that knows what they're talking about. So it's easier for me to type sexpert than it is for me to say sexologist or sexuality educator. Like, it's just easier to say sexpert. People just run to that. Or they'll say sex therapist. There are actual sex therapists that work with, you know, marriage and family therapy, and they're sex therapists. Those are people that actually do one-on-one micro practice with folks. And so people want to call me a sex therapist all the time. And I'm like, no. I don't do therapy. I don't like it. I don't want to, you know, I'm not built for it, because I'm an empath, and I would absorb everything I'm talking about in session. And I know that. So via my limitations, I decided to become a sexologist so I can help inform the work that sex therapists do.
I like that. I don't want to skirt around the topic. I definitely want to jump in. And
yeah, absolutely.
You were talking about orgasm, and when typically when someone thinks about an orgasm, they think about one particular aspect, and I'm not the expert, so I'm not going to even go into that. Talk to us about orgasm. What is it? And give us all that good stuff.
Okay, so orgasms are the rush of pleasure that comes from any type of sexual manipulation or stimulation of the body. It's not something that happens just for procreation. It's not something that happens only based on genital stimulation. It's none of that. It's a rush of pleasure and energy as a result of manipulation or stimulation of the body. And to that end, there are 13 types of orgasms for bodies with vulvas and 8 different types of orgasms for bodies with penises.
13 and 8.
13.
And what they teach you about is one. Well, no, they don't teach you.
Yeah, no, you don't get to talk about orgasm at all. Yeah, media focuses on typically it's more of a vaginal orgasm or a clitoral orgasm that you see in media. And vaginal orgasm, I get a lot of times women asking, you know, I've never had a vaginal orgasm. Am I normal? And the answer is yes, because the vaginal orgasm is a myth. You can thank patriarchy for that one. So vaginal orgasms do occur, but they're less common than clitoral orgasms. So we think that we're supposed to have this penetrative sex because what it does is it normalizes heterosexual sex. And that's why media focuses on vaginal orgasms. It makes that normal.
They're getting us all the way into our sex lives too. Like,
yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right. Yeah. Whoa,
so that's normalized, right?
Yeah.
So we have, so the vaginal orgasm is one, and it does happen, but there's a level of mind-body connectivity that has to be there for you to reach vaginal orgasm. But also, you know, lubrication and penetration and size and width and all the different things that go into that. So vaginal orgasm and then clitoral orgasm is basically in the vulva. That's the clitoris is a whole organ unto itself, and its only job is pleasure. So that is usually stimulated via oral sex or manual stimulation. But first, let me just tell you what the orgasms are, and then I'll go through them.
Okay.
So we have the vaginal orgasm, anal orgasm, oral, nipple, clitoral, G-spot, A-spot, U-spot, cervical, erogenous zone, mental, blended, and corgasm. Okay? The anal orgasm is because there are actually more nerve endings in the anus than there are in the vagina. Okay. The vagina being the canal that the penis goes into. There are more nerve endings in the anus than there are in the vagina. So, it makes sense that orgasms are possible from the anus. Then you have the oral or kissing orgasm. People that are orally fixated, like myself, can reach orgasm from kissing or performing oral sex. Not receiving, but performing.
That makes sense. I'm getting some aha moments up in here. I'm keep
right? So if you reach orgasm from performing oral sex on your partner, then you are someone that is orally fixated and you feel pleasure in a way that gets you to the point of orgasm, right?
Hmm.
Then the nipple orgasm. And so the nipple orgasm is very, very similar to the oral orgasm in the sense that you have to be fixated. You have to be connected to your body. So the type of mental, physical connection required to achieve all of these orgasms is amazing. And that comes back to the secrecy we were talking about. If you can't be free to openly enjoy it, how can you connect to all these different orgasm types? So the nipple orgasm is one. Go ahead.
I also wonder if this ties to knowing yourself. You know what I'm saying? And then, of course, because if I'm orally fixated, then my partner needs to know that. Like, you don't need to be coming for me in another space when this is what I need to do. So some sort of self-awareness is necessary for all of these.
Yeah, but the self-awareness comes through masturbation, in my mind, because self-pleasure allows you to figure out what your pleasure looks like so that you can communicate that to your partners.
See, and that's another taboo, quote unquote taboo topic, is masturbation. And there's no manual for any of this. There's no manual for life. And what we tell people, the way we tell it, we have people getting into relationships and they're miserable sexually because they never got to know themselves through whatever self-pleasure method, and they don't know how to tell somebody what they like, or they don't yet know what they like.
Right. Right. And then, I don't do that. I don't masturbate. Oh, I don't do that. I don't have to do that because I have a partner. Right. And so the conversation around masturbation is such that you only do it when you don't have nobody to have sex with.
Right.
And the conversation is focused on the genitals. We don't talk about masturbating, you know, with your mouth or masturbating your nipples or masturbating your anus or any of that. We always talk about genital masturbation.
Yeah. Oh, my
and
goodness.
So, again, so then the pleasure is still focused in one area.
Uh-huh. And just imagine when stuff like this, because you are educating me, like some of what you said, I have no clue, like completely. But stuff like this makes me sad for people who don't hear this and who, you know, didn't hear this. And so that means, mm-hmm. you know, maybe they lived a less than pleasurable sexual existence. But we gonna get ourselves awakened on today.
On this day. So the next one is the clitoris, and we talked about that one. And then the G-spot orgasm. The G-spot actually is 2 inches in and up in the vaginal canal. And it's actually another access point for the clitoris, because the way the clitoris is, it looks like a heart with two legs, mm-hmm. basically. Mm-hmm. And so the heart straddles the vaginal canal. And so when you reach your fingers in and up, that's a way to access the midpoint of the clitoris. So even though female ejaculation and squirting is absolutely a G-spot orgasm, you can get it from just clitoral stimulation, because the G-spot is another access point for the clitoris.
Go ahead.
Then you have the A-spot, which is the anterior fornix, which is at the back of the vaginal canal, right before, at the top before the cervix. And that spot, when that spot is touched and it's touched to the point or stimulated to the point of orgasm, if you've ever been having penetrative sex and you feel like you're about to have this emotional outburst and you want to say I love you, or you start crying, that is an A-spot orgasm. When you're just having regular casual sex and you feel like you want to say I love you to that person, but you know better.
Right. Be careful.
Right, because you can't take it back, right? That's an right. A-spot orgasm.
You gotta be quick then. You were like, I love you, spaghetti. I don't know. I was
right,
dinner,
right. Right. Well, I love that dick though. You just, I was talking to your dick. I'm talking to you.
That part.
Don't get excited, right? This is an A and B conversation. See your way out. So that's the A spot. And then you also have the U spot orgasm. And the U spot is it's a ring of nerve endings around the urethra. Right? There is a small ring of very, very sensitive nerves around the urethra. So when you are, like, it's similar to the sensation of, like, when you have to pee real bad, mm-hmm. and then when you go pee, you're like, oh, like that relief, yeah. that pleasure that comes from that. It's very, very similar to that. And you don't have to actually expel anything from your body to have a U-spot orgasm. It just is, it's that sensation is very, very similar.
Yeah. Okay.
And then you have the cervical, right? And then you have the cervical orgasm, which mm-hmm. the cervical orgasm is exactly what it sounds like. So you can actually reach orgasm from having your cervix stimulated. Now, I'm not sure. This is one that I haven't had. This is one that I have not experienced. So I can't really speak to what the sensation is similar to. But when I first learned about the cervical orgasm, all I could think of was, God, that must hurt. Like, because my only point of reference for cervical stimulation is like a pap smear, or like if you're dealing with a person right. that's huge, or an object that's huge and it goes all the way to the back. Like, I can't imagine that feeling good. However, it's absolutely a thing. So if you read about women going into orgasm when they have their children, when they're giving birth, they have an orgasm, that is a cervical orgasm.
Wow. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
That's what got you into this. Come on now.
Right? I was like, So, yeah. Wow. And then you have the erogenous zone orgasms. And so erogenous zones can be anything on any body, any space body, right? So some people's erogenous zones are, you know, that spot on your neck or behind the back, like behind your knees, the back of your legs. And so if you're standing next to somebody, they just start rubbing behind your knee. Like sometimes that does it for people. So it's an orgasm based on stimulation of erogenous zone. And so an erogenous zone could be something that's not even necessarily an erogenous zone for most people. Like people that are paraplegic or quadriplegic have the transference of their sexual feelings to like maybe their thumb or something. And so stimulating their thumb is similar to stimulating their genitals to the point of orgasm. And that would become an erogenous zone orgasm instead of a penile or vaginal orgasm.
That actually right? makes me smile, because I've that is something that I've wondered from time to time, and so it kind of makes me smile that look, you still got an opportunity.
Yeah, and it just depends on your, who your body workers are, who your physical therapists are, but it really is a mind over matter kind of thing. And I can send you a video clip. There's a guy that had a spinal cord injury, and his actual erotic feelings transferred to his thumb, and he didn't realize it until one day he was doing something, and his he was getting like a body massage or something, and someone, his worker, started stimulating his thumb because they were doing a hand massage, and he started coming, and he was like, "Wait a minute,
right?"
You know. So it was an accidental finding, but it is possible. It doesn't happen with everyone, but it is absolutely possible. And then also with erogenous zones can also be created. So I don't know if you know this, but tattoos become erogenous zones.
Oh, I did not know that.
Because think about it like this. When you get a tattoo, that little needle is going in and out of your skin really, really quickly. So it is creating like a hypersensitive area on your body. Then if you're getting your tattoos kissed and things like that, it gives your partner something to focus on, and it's an area of focus for you because you decorated it. So it was important for you for some reason. And so when your partner has something to focus on, it gives them more of an incentive to do that, and it can become an erogenous zone. And I tell people to take like edible body paint or chocolate or something like that and like put it on their tattoos, and then have their partner get, you know, work to get the chocolate or the peanut butter or whatever off their bodies. And that's kind of a way to train you for that to become an erogenous zone, or just get an erogenous zone tattoo. That helps too. So it just depends, but they can absolutely become a thing.
That's deep. I did not know that at all. That's pretty deep.
Yeah. And then you have mental orgasms, which mental orgasms are like, I don't know if you watch Black Mirror, but well, it's on Netflix. It's really a mind fuck. It's amazing. So there was a show where these two homeboys were playing this video game, and it's a submersive video game, but nothing was happening to their bodies physically, but they're playing the game. And one person was a male character and one person was a female character, and their characters ended up having sex in the game. And they had the physical responses of that sex in their bodies, but they weren't even in the same room. So the power of your mind is such that you can reach orgasm from mental stimulation. So in those virtual reality places and things like that, without your body even being stimulated, you can actually reach orgasm. So when people do fantasy and cosplay and things like that, it's kind of directly associated with stimulating that part of the pleasure area.
That actually makes sense.
And then blended orgasms are any combination of any of those. Any combination of any of those orgasms I just mentioned are blended orgasms. So you can have, you know, nipple orgasm and oral orgasm simultaneously, or clitoral and vaginal simultaneously, or any, or like anal beads. If you put anal beads in your body and then you're having sex, and right before you start to reach orgasm, you pull those anal beads out slowly, because that's how they're supposed to be pulled, then that gives you pleasure and stimulation that way too. You could have an anal orgasm while you're having a penile or vaginal or clitoral orgasm.
That's the max pack of the orgasm.
Oh yeah, because like when I sell the double bullets and triple bullets, so with a double bullet, you could insert one vaginally and then use the other one to stimulate the clitoris. With a triple bullet, you could put one anally, one vaginally, and then use the other one to stimulate the clitoris.
Okay, that's a party.
Yeah, that's the whole. It's for your birthday, so special occasions. You know, there are triple threat vibrators that have an anal probe, a vaginal probe, and a clitoral probe. You know, a one, two in the pink, one in the stink kind of thing. So there's lots of ways to have multiple genital orgasms at once. And even for people that have penises, if you're masturbating or getting oral sex, or you're having sex, you're putting your penis in your partner, and then you have anal beads in, or you have a bullet in your anus, or you have a butt plug in or something like that, and you pull them out or stimulate them while you're having sex, again, you're going to have genital orgasms, like a multitude of genital orgasms. So you have to focus on stimulating yourself, use lots of lubricant, and figure out which toys stimulate you the way you want. There are toys that clip and clamp the nipples. There are suction cup toys for the nipples. There are things that vibrate that suck into the nipples. There are vibrating tongue rings. And for my clients that are orally fixated, the vibrating tongue ring is just masturbating. You don't even have to be kissing anyone or putting your mouth on anybody. You have this vibrating tongue ring. It's like a rubber band with a bullet on it. And you put it in your mouth and it just vibrates and it feels amazing. So you don't even have to be using your mouth. And you can use vibration as a way to explore your pleasure.
So that whole toy, it has expanded. Like, I've never heard of the oral ring and, you know, some of that stuff.
And there are lots of them. And because when people think about sex toys, they think about big dick-shaped vibrators, and that's it.
Right.
They don't think about strokers and pocket pussies and clitoral pumps and penis pumps and cock rings and, you know, beads and balls and eggs and, you know, bullets and rings. There's so many things. So many things. I actually did a workshop at the North Carolina Sex Con called Toy Story about how sex toys bridge the gap in the continuum of care for patients with chronic conditions like menopause and ED and hypertension and diabetes, like if it impacts sexual function. And also talks about disability and mobility issues and how sex toys bridge the gap for those people too. So sex toys and sex and tech, oh my God, sex toys are amazing. There are toys that you can wear and your partner can have the app on their phone and they can turn it on and control it from their phone. Like, no matter where they are on the planet, they can control your vibrator from their phone. You know what I'm saying? There are toys that have a charger like your phone has a charger so that you don't have to run out of batteries. There's nothing worse when the batteries die right when you're going to come. So to remedy that, they have toys that have chargers. You know, there are toys that connect to your computer through a USB port. So there's no batteries at all, no charger at all. Your computer is the battery.
Wow. So when you are working to get an orgasm, when someone is working, what should they be focusing on? You know what I'm saying? Should they be focusing on, okay, you know, or where do you look?
That's a great question. So first, you can't be working toward an orgasm. Sex is not an escalator where you get into a certain point and then it's over.
Nicely said.
Sex is a journey, and pleasure is a journey. So if you're working toward an orgasm, you're never going to get it because it's work, right? So what you do is you focus on the pleasure and what feels good and just explore the things that feel good and just enjoy the sex. I've had amazing sex that I didn't get an orgasm from because it felt so good. I was just focused on enjoying the sex. So sometimes orgasm is not the goal, right?
Yeah.
And if we take orgasm off the table as the ultimate goal of sex, what do we have? We have sex for pleasure. Because orgasm has been, I'm going to say gamified, but orgasm and sex has been the carrot that they dangle in front of you for reproduction.
Yeah.
And on TV, you know, they have sex till they come and then they stop and they just collapse on the bed or whatever, right?
Yeah.
But what about multi-orgasmic people? What about people that enjoy being stimulated after they reach orgasm, right? Yeah. So it doesn't have to just be a pursuit of the orgasm. And people say, you know, life is a journey. Sex is a journey. And so trying to figure out, go ahead, I'm sorry.
No, go for it.
Well, no, I'm saying if you're trying to figure out how, like if you say, oh, well, let's get you talk about these orgasms, I'm going to see how many of I can get. Like, got to catch them all like Pokemon, right? So if you're trying to do that, that's great. But you want to explore and just do what feels good. Get you some lubricant, get you something that vibrates real soft, and just explore. It's not about, oh, I got it. Oh, I got that orgasm. Okay, check that off the list. Okay, now I'm going to go to the next one.
Right.
It's not like that. It's about the pleasure. And so we have to take our binary hat off of either I'm coming or I'm not. And I was guilty of that back when I was pimping before I retired. You know, so... Before I retired, I would say, if I don't come, you can't come back. But A, my orgasm is not your job. My orgasm is my responsibility. And B, it's not about just the orgasm. It's about the journey, exploring your partner, the connection, the intimacy, the breathing, the touching, the kneading, the kissing, the licking, the sucking, all of the things that go into what a sexual connection is.
Yeah. So this this conversation is, I don't know, further evidence that there needs to be a reprogramming just around sex, period. Because how you frame that, that it's a journey, I lived that for a long time. Like, you know, not so much if I don't come, you can't come back, but it was proof, quote unquote, that the sex was good. As opposed to actually enjoying the sex itself, you know, for and letting that be what's good. So I love that. I love that framing. Here's a question. I'm sure you've been asked, but it was on my mind. Like, I've always felt that we're ill-equipped in this area, period. We you know, there's messaging, as we talked about, that kind of makes you want to shroud your sexuality and sex in secrecy. But I feel like as we open this conversation up, that parents should be having these conversations with their children. How, mm-hmm. when, and, you know, do you agree? I should ask that part first. Do you agree? And if so, how should parents have these conversations? And when do you think it would be appropriate to do so?
So I wholeheartedly agree. But the point of contention that I have with that is I don't think it should be a conversation. If you are a sex positive parent, you parent in a way that the way you parent is the conversation. So it's an ongoing process. So, and I think that it should start as early as potty training, because that is when you learn your genitals and what they do and how they work. And that's where it starts. So it starts with, well, goody, what does sex ed in pre-K look like? Sex ed in pre-K looks like the anatomy, the proper names for the body parts, right? But it also looks like consent and boundaries and autonomy. So if you've seen these cute little YouTube videos where the preschoolers walk up and they point to the greeting that they want, if they want a fist bump or a high five or a hug or just wave, or they don't want to do anything, that's sex education. Because what you're doing is you're training them, you're showing them that they have the autonomy to make choices for themselves about how they want to be treated.
Oh, yeah.
And you're showing them that their choices have power, that their choices will be honored.
And that they should expect for their choices to be honored.
And they should expect their choices to be honored. Because if kids, when we were little, if Nana want a hug, you give a Nana a hug.
Period.
The end of that. You know, now, if we teach our kids, if you don't want a hug, you can say no thank you.
Mm-hmm.
Or you can offer a high five or offer an alternative or just say no thank you. No is a full sentence. And when we teach our children early that their no has power, right, then we're teaching them that their no has power. We're teaching them that they don't have to do something just because they feel like they're expected to do it or society dictates they should be doing something. Because sex, Oscar Wilde has a quote that says, everything is about sex except sex. Sex is about power. So when you empower your children early, right, you empower your children to make their own decisions of how they want to be treated and give them the expectation that that will be respected. That's sex education. That's consent. That's boundaries. That's autonomy. You're helping them frame life. So then when you teach children consent early, the consent violations like sexual assault and rape are less likely, because rape is not about sex either. It's about power. It's about violation. If everyone feels empowered, they won't feel like my no doesn't have any power. You know, it's coercion. When you have sex because you feel like you're supposed to, if your boss says you can't have this, you know, you can't have this promotion unless you have sex with me, then you've been taught your whole life that your no has power. So your no has power now too. You deal with feelings of rejection and disappointment in comprehensive sex education. And that starts in pre-K as well. It's emotional, you know, emotional training, right? Schools probably wouldn't get shot up as often if people knew how to deal with rejection and disappointment, right? So I can tie every social ill back to comprehensive sex education and the lack thereof.
Yeah.
So I don't think this one is one conversation to be had. What happens is you build on these skills as your children grow, and it's age appropriate.
Right.
And so as they start to engage with other kids and other adults and things like that, you build on those skills. Just like in math, you get 1 + 1, then the next grade you get double digits, and the next grade you get algebra. It's the same like any other subject in school. You build on the existing skill sets.
Wow. So when you have your workshops and when you do, you mentioned coming to different settings to have, you know, group discussions, how in-depth do you go? Is there, you know what I'm saying, do you have specific topics or do you cover some of this where you're connecting, showing people how it's all interconnected?
Well, there are lots of different workshops that I offer. So it just depends on what that particular client group wants. If they want to make it a series, if we're going to do this for 12 months, once a month, you know, like, and we cover a different topic each time. And again, it's just building on those skill sets. I don't want to scare parents and make them think that they need to have dildos on the coffee table to be sex positive.
Right.
You know, that's not it either. And like, I had a guy friend and he was like, he has all boys. And he says, oh, it's going to be easy to raise boys and sex and this and that. And, you know, you tell me when you want to have sex and we'll go get the condoms and we'll get you different kinds. You can figure out what size you like and this. You know, he thought he was going to go to Walgreens with his fellas and just, you know.
Yeah.
And come to find out they were having sex without telling him because they didn't want to have a conversation with him about that.
Mm.
And he was like, how could I have handled that? I was like, well, what you could have done is got them all together, show them how condoms work, tell them what they are, show them how to put them on, and then just have condoms like in a bowl somewhere. So they can just grab them as they need them and they don't have to go with you for nothing.
Yeah. So, okay. So we run it. Our time is running low, but I want to get into a piece of that. How can people, because we discussed it, it exists. There is this emergence where people are becoming more comfortable thinking about it and talking about it within their circles. How can we become comfortable to have it openly?
With our circles or with our children?
With both. Let's do both.
Well, I think just in general, sex positivity is a buzzword nowadays, and people have to understand what sex positivity means. It doesn't mean just having sex with whoever you want. It means operating in a space around sexuality and sex and orientation that is shame and stigma free. So that means reducing stigma and shame around STIs and STEs and orientations and genders and everything. So it's about respect and boundaries and not being just tolerant. No one wants to be anywhere where they're tolerated. It's about being respectful. Nice. And again, that's something that starts in pre-K. So be mindful and treat people the way you would want to be treated. And think about this. If it was your child, what would you want someone to do for them? Because all of us are somebody's child, no matter how old we get. If it was your kid, would you want them to be in this position? How would you want it to go? And be that person. And sometimes you have to check yourself and think, okay. You're like, okay, wait, that was a... You know, that was a gut reaction. Let me think about this differently. Sometimes our training kicks in before our reprogramming. We're making a conscious effort to change. Sometimes that gut reaction is the wrong one most of the time, right? And so you have to stop and go, okay, let me breathe. Let me refocus. What could I be doing here? What could I be doing differently? And it's an active process, just like separating yourself from white supremacy or decolonizing your life. You have to check it yourself. You have to realize, oh, wait, where did that feeling come from? Why do I feel that way? You know what I'm saying? You have to ask yourself the hard questions and do that work.
Yeah, that I connect with that deeply because, you know, my four kids, there were so many things where I was like, for, you know, a good number of years, this is what we're doing and this is it. And then somewhere along the way, I'd be like, wait a minute. Okay, y'all, hold on. Bring it in. Let me redo that. And I'd share with them the process. You know what? This is what I believe because it's what I learned. But I'm now learning something new, and I'm not comfortable with that anymore. So I'm changing that. I'm, you know, letting them see that it is possible to change perspectives on things. But I was worried that it made me seem wishy-washy.
No, it's what it's doing is showing your evolution, and it's showing that you don't have to be tied down to what you were always fed. And to go a step further, then you say, what do you think about this? Because then you're giving them a voice and you're giving them an opportunity to calibrate how they feel about it. They may agree with the old way. You don't know.
Yeah. So, okay, real quick, we talked about, you know, a lot of these things being able to be taught in the earlier years. What do you say for people who didn't have these, maybe their children are, you know, 17, maybe they're, you know, 25.
Right.
How can they start the conversation today?
I think, because like you said, coming to your kids and going, hey, well, this is what I thought was happening. This is how I used to feel. I feel differently now. I want to talk to you about this. Understand that your children are sexual beings. Understand that pleasure exists for every person on this planet. So don't, oh, you being fast, or you twerking on Instagram, or you doing this, or you doing that. Take all that judgment off, because they're not going to listen to you. And make space to understand that these are people that enjoy pleasure. Period. And talk to them about that. And it may be difficult, and it may be uncomfortable for them. But yeah. I talked to you about some people that can help with that. They specifically work with parent-child dynamics, children at any age. And there's ways to get around that, and tools and worksheets and books that you can read, and just to kind of help you frame that, because every child is different.
Right. So there are 1,099 questions still left in my hand. We only have like 45 to 65 seconds left. So I am going to give, at the end of this episode, all of your contact information and your product and service offerings again. If there was one last thing, one final thought that you would like to share, what would that be?
Even when you're exploring your own sexuality, be the person that you wish you'd had to teach you about it in the first place. Understand and make space for mistakes and corrections, and question yourself. Why do I feel this way? Why do I feel like this is the only way to do this? Where did that come from? What does that look like? What if I tried it this way? Like, challenge your values that you already have. Challenge your training that you already have. And that'll help you unpack it to where you can step back far enough to enjoy it.
We have been given a charge, y'all, along with some valuable information and insight. This conversation evolved into much more than I planned for. Thank you so much, Goody, for coming over and answering all my questions. For everybody who's listening, connect with Goody. Her Instagram and Facebook is @AskGoody. Her website is askgoody.com. And her YouTube is Goody Howard. All of her contact information is located in the podcast description within the Anchor app, or you can access the episode straight through my website at charlenerfeathers.org. Thank you for hanging with me on I Got Questions. Today's discussion is just the beginning. The next part is up to you. Take this conversation into your community with your families, your friends, your church, wherever you go. Discover more answers and ask some questions of your own. And hey, keep me in the conversation. Visit my website at charlenerfeathers.org and click the Contact Me page. If we keep asking and answering questions, we'll keep moving forward. Till next time, peace out, y'all.